Alaska Public Television presents Debate for the State. And now your moderator, Michael Carey.
Good evening. I'm Michael Carey, your host for this year's Debate for the State. Joining me are Lori Townsend, news director for the Alaska Public Radio Network, and Tim Bradner, reporter for the Alaska Journal of Commerce. Tonight, you will have the opportunity to hear from the candidates for Congress, Democrat Sharon Cisna and Republican Don Young. We invited Libertarian candidate Jim McDermott. He chose not to participate. The debate will cover domestic topics, foreign policy, and Alaska issues. Now, let's meet the candidates. Ms. Cisna, your opening statement of 1 minute, please.
Yes, I came to Alaska on a two-week vacation 45 years ago, and since that time, I've had the opportunity really to travel around Alaska, get to know the people of Alaska by through the mental health work I did with different families and children, and then my publication business of 27 years. Past 14 years, I've been in the Alaska State Legislature and have traveled around looking really at well-being issues and health issues. So I've spent a huge amount of time getting to know Alaskans. I'm here for that reason.
Congressman Young.
I'm Don Young, of course, the congressman for all of Alaska, and I've been serving you for 40 years, and I'm asking you to help me serve for another 2 years. It's important we have seniority and the ability to get the job back in Washington, D.C. This is an important job for the state of Alaska, and the reason I've stayed in it all this time. It's never been about Don Young. It's been about who can best do the job. I'll continue to work for you as I've been working for you in the last 40 years. I hope you'll give me a vote on November the 6th.
Now we'll go to reporters' questions. The recipient of the question will have 45 seconds to respond, and the other candidate will have 30 seconds to comment on what he or she has heard. Tim Bradner, you have the first question for Sharon Cisna.
Ms. Cisna, what is wrong with our country?
I believe that one of the really serious problems that we have in our country is the fact that we have lost our way in terms of following the Constitution of our country. And a lot of that is because in the busy world we live in, we're not really focused on the people. And the people are the heart of our government. That's certainly true in Alaska. I think it's true throughout the United States. We're not really paying attention to the needs of the people, to the constitutional rights of the people, and to make sure that government, which does those pieces that industry can't do, is done right. Done well.
Congressman Young.
You know, I'm really proud of America yet, but it has problems in the sense that people, and as Sharon has said, are not being listened to by the federal government. We're controlled and governed by regulations coming through the executive branch. We're not following the Constitution. It is regulatory law, 1,855,000 laws that were never voted on. And I will ask the American people and Alaskan people, let's get back to the Constitution where the Congress passes the law, not having the executive branch to do so.
Question from Lori Townsend.
Mr. Young, we continue to see severe weather systems across the country, this current enormous hurricane and snowstorm on the East Coast, the severe drought throughout the lower 48 in the summertime. These will add to the federal deficit because they require federal help. Should FEMA be exempt from shrinking federal coffers?
Well, it all depends. You know, a lot of this is caused by people themselves. You know, we live next to the coast and we should accept that responsibility. This is not anything new. This has been going on for years. I would suggest that under the continuing resolution, we did, in fact, boost up the disaster monies. And we'll probably do so under this big realm that's happened back east during this storm. These are not new. It's just the fact is a lot of people keep thinking it will not happen. It's like Alaskans don't think an earthquake will happen again. It will. And what we should do is prepare how we live, where we live, and in fact, make sure we don't be living in the floodplains.
Sharon Cisna, 30 seconds.
It is my belief that there is more extreme weather coming in ways that we hadn't had the same experiences. At the same time, I think one of the things that's happening more and more is that people are not prepared or preparing to the degree that they would have had they been there longer. We have a mobile workforce that's constantly moving around. We don't have people who've been there a long time, a lot of times. And education is something we're kind of...
We're going to have to leave it right there. Tim Bradner, okay. Your second question.
Mr. Young, should illegal immigrants who are working and taking care of themselves be given a path to possible citizenship, or should they be deported?
You can't deport them, but there has to be a better way they can become a citizen. And my problem is this is illegal. If they're legal residents, this is great, but to have illegals come in and give them the same opportunities as a legal immigrant. I've argued all along we ought to make it easier to become a legal resident. Background checks, making sure they're employable and in fact can do the things that they say they can do. We have this challenge now, especially I would call down in the lower 48, California's, you know, been indulged by illegals. And a lot of them are very good citizens, but they should be here legally. And that's the challenge. We tried this amnesty once before and then decreased the amount of illegals. So let's make it easier to become a citizen so we don't have this problem.
Sharon Sisson.
I certainly agree that making it easier to become a citizen is a good idea. I think there's kind of a behavioral component here, and that it is important if people are the kind of people who are, they may be illegal, but they're really giving to the economy and to the culture of America, then we should have ways to make exceptions and make sure that we're looking person by person and doing this on a not just a blanket, but really put some time and effort into who we're bringing in.
Thank you. Lori Townsend, second question for Sharon Sisson.
Ms. Sisson, should gay and lesbian people be allowed to marry or have a legally recognized union that would afford them partner benefits?
I guess the thing I believe in the most is love. And being old enough to really have seen a lifetime of that, it's rare. And when, in fact, people fall in love, then I think a union of some kind is reasonable. And I think the government has no business being in people's minds or in their homes trying to judge them. And I don't think the rest of us really have that. I think we should celebrate love whenever it happens and wherever it happens. If we're talking adults and consenting people, then I say go for it.
Don Young for 30 seconds.
You know, there's only one marriage, that's between a man and woman. That's what I believe in. I think that's the way it should be, and that's what I support.
Back to Tim Bradner.
Mr. Young, in the U.S. Northeast states and some Midwestern states, there's water contamination issues from hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, as it's called sometimes, with citizens living near the areas where this is happening. Should Congress be involved in this? Is there a way to balance domestic energy with the protection of water, air quality of these residents?
Well, Tim, first, I disagree with you because I don't believe the contamination has been found. They say sometimes in cases where they've had an old well, this could be fixed. This is an old well, not a new well. And this is a way to try to stop our independence. If you notice the paper today that there's now a big move, we may get $2 diesel fuel from natural gas. We're exporting natural gas. We have a natural gas that's killed our pipeline because it's too cheap in lower 48. This idea that fracking is bad is not new. They are down 12,000 feet. There is no water at 12,000 feet. It's a matter of casing. And Congress has looked at this, and I think we're going to stay out of it. It's up to the states.
Sharon Sisson, 30 seconds.
I believe that what we have done is that in our development, oftentimes we're leaving people behind, and this is part of that constitutional rights, that in fact it's really important to make sure that we're looking at have there been mitigation efforts and the analysis of what people in the region believe, and are they being compensated if there's bad things happen? And they should have some say if it's their home.
Lori Townsend, final question in this round.
Ms. Sisson, the Supreme Court's Citizen United decision allows rich organizations to spend as much as they want on super PACs to support or oppose individual candidates. Are campaign contributions of this magnitude healthy for democracy?
I don't believe so. I believe that For instance, I think in the process that we're in right now, this whole election process and even our race, that the most important part is really focusing on the people and really trying to understand what the people do need and giving the option that you give as a person. To be buying and selling our representatives does not serve our country well.
Don Young, 30 seconds.
Well, I don't think they buy and sell representatives, never have thought that. This is a matter of the First Amendment, freedom of speech. Individual groups or individuals are, can go, put their money together in a pool, have a right to do so. I don't like what I see as far as these huge amounts of money, especially if you look at the Obama campaign, that a lot of times this money is coming from overseas. I don't think that's right. They sent it to one of their subsidiaries here in the United States and it's contributed. That we should be looking at. But it's not to take away from individuals who want to collectively pool their money and actually use that money for having their voices heard.
Now the candidates will have an opportunity to question one another. Questions of up to 15 seconds. The opponent will have 45 seconds to respond. The person who asks the question will have 15 seconds to comment. Ms. Cisna, you go first with your first question for Don Young.
Congressman, at the last debate we had, you talked about how the last session was the worst session you'd been through. You also talked about the years of experience you've had, the your ranking as, and I think you mentioned the second longest in the leadership, your years in Congress. And I've taken some classes in public administration.
We need a question here, Ms.
The question is, can you explain why, with the leadership capabilities you have, why was that a bad session, and what could you have done, what might have happened had you taken more leadership in the outcome of this last session?
Well, Sharon, the House did its job. It's the Democrat Senate. Harry Reid has not allowed any House bills to come back from the Senate side. Now, that's the Democrat Senate with the backing of Obama. The House has done its job. We've passed 22 good bills. And as far as my leadership goes, look what we did in the highway bill. I was able to take and refund the railroad. The Senate didn't do that. Put permanent funding in for the ferry session. And the Senate didn't do that. Get roads for the native village. The Senate didn't do that. I have had a very successful, in fact, I've passed more bills since in my tenure. Actually, I would say, I think I'm only second in the total Congress. With 60 bills have become law and signed into by presidents. So I've been very active. So I'm just arguing to get rid of the Senate. In fact, we made a big mistake when we created a Senate from the House.
Sharon Cisna, 15 seconds.
Well, I have gone to now 70 communities around Alaska, and what I'm hearing is that people are not feeling as if they have heard and been, have not heard or been heard from, not listened to. And that, in fact, leadership needs
Thank
to be
you, Sharon
spent.
Cisna. Don Young, your question for Sharon Cisna.
Well, Sharon, you've made an issue of the TSA and how you're getting back to Washington, D.C., but what would you do if you were elected to change the TSA? How would you do it?
And thank you. I had legislation in this last session that would have done some really decent things. And, in fact, Congress has been working on this not fast enough as far as I'm concerned, and that's putting the opt-out provision that was at the very beginning and actually allowing states like Alaska to opt out of the federal program to do the privatization that actually gives the people, the agents that are doing that process, the ability to do it with honor to the people going through. And the states and airports that have done this have had wonderful success, cheaper, better response from the public, and it's faster. And that's what we can do. It's reform, not replace, but reform.
Mr. Young, 15 seconds.
Well, Sharon, thank you, because that's what the provision of my bill. That provision is in my bill, T. Lou. And your bill was put into the House down, I believe, in the state legislature, never went anywhere. So, you know, I respectfully say, how are you going to change it if you can't do it in the state legislature? Under my bill, we can contract it out. We did the job in the Congress.
Don Young, your second question, Mr. Young.
Four?
from Ms. Sisna.
Sharon, I just, you know, I don't really have a question. I'm just curious about how you're going to get back and forth to Washington, D.C. from Alaska when we have 2 weeks on and 1 week off and still be in contact with your constituents back here in Alaska.
I really appreciate that question because it has been asked before. And what I have found is that in my travel, I'm doing a huge amount of ground travel. And in doing ground travel, what you see is you don't see the one person sitting next to you. You see whole communities. You're constantly going through the parts of the state that you're actually representing. And it will, going back to Washington, D.C., it's another day. But that's all it is. And what you're seeing usually in that is the people that you actually are having to interact with and give services to. So what I have found in the travel that I've been doing in the last year has been rich. It's been a rich experience.
Again, though, Sharon, if I can suggest, you can't get to Washington and back from Washington in 1 day, added 1 day. I do this all the time. It takes me 2 days by airplane. And if you come back for 1 week, if you take 2 days, now you take 5 days, you won't be back in Alaska at all. You'll just be in Washington, D.C., and that's not good.
Your next question.
My next question is that what I have heard a great deal of is that there have been real issues that have had to be dealt with by yourself with the Ethics Committee in Congress, and I'm having real concerns about the amount of money.
What's the question in here, Ms. Sisna, please?
How do you deal with really serving the people of Alaska when you're having to raise money and deal with those kinds of problems rather than actually talking with and serving the state?
Because I'm a hard worker. In fact, this is not an issue anymore, never has been. If you believe in the legal system, the FBA has cleared me totally. The Access Party has cleared me totally, and this is a classic example of crew trying to prosecute a Republican, and I'm a little bit ashamed, but you asked me that question, that yesterday. That is not today.
Ms. Sisna, 15 seconds.
I have seen many, many documents online, and some of them actually from Congress that have said otherwise, and I have some real concerns. I think you're an important person in many ways. I think that as time has gone on, it's time to move to something, to someone who's had more.
We're
going
to have to leave it there,
experience.
Mr. Young.
Thank you.
What am
your
I next doing? Question.
How many questions? I thought
you get three two. For
oh, good.
Ms. Sisna. This will be your last in this segment.
Do you believe everything you read on the computers and Twitter and Facebook?
Absolutely not, but I
so
have.
So you believe what they said against me?
I've had enough years as a student to be able to figure out what.
So you believe what's that's being said? Shame on you, Sharon. You know better than that. You're supposed to be a lady. You're supposed to be a lady.
Let's let her give a response here.
And I'm supposed to be
a
person who, actually, I'm supposed to be a person who is paying attention to what's going on, to listen to the people and what they're saying. And I think one of the very important things that we have to pay attention to when it's time for us to finish and bring on new people, that's an important part of the job.
We're going to have to go to our final question this round from Sharon Sisna for Mr. Young.
If, in fact, you serve this next session.
I will.
If you do, will you listen to the people of Alaska and make the concerns of your public actually a bigger priority in what you do, and tell us how?
You know, it's strange because I do listen to the public. I've been back to the state every 2 weeks. I go to this area of the state, and I've listened to the public, and they wouldn't reelect me. They've been doing this now for, this is my 22nd session. That's 42 years, and every time they've voted for me. And that's because I do listen. I'm one of the few listeners in Congress. And I have taken, convey that message back, and I fight for Alaska and always have. And I don't have many great ideas of my own. I usually get those ideas from the people, and I'll continue to do that. I've done in the past, I'll do it in the future.
Sharon Sisna, 15 seconds.
My experience is with all of the people that I've talked to that is not the case.
Okay, let's go to reporter questions on Alaska domestic policy, starting with Tim Bradner.
Mr. Young, you have a long history in rural Alaska. In your opinion, what's the most pressing problem in rural Alaska?
Energy.
And besides energy, what can government do?
Mostly through the state. The federal government has tried to get the gas line be built. We put the $18 billion guarantee in. The state didn't do anything. That was Senator Murkowski and Senator Stevens. We need to build a gas line, and we need to build power sites wherever the new power lies, be it geothermal, be it wind, or be it gas line, or in fact, we may electrify the state.
But aside from energy, other?
Well, there's other problems primarily is communication, a sense of physical communication, be able to move from one village to another village without air traffic, without having to use the water. I'm talking about small roads. Health has been good. We're getting better, a lot better than we were in the past. But the big reason people are moving to Anchorage and Fairbanks is because the energy costs are so high, and that's the number one issue.
Sharon Sisna, 30 seconds.
After having 14 years in the state legislature, what I've seen as the largest department is, in fact, health. Second largest is education, and those are two of the areas that I see the most in rural Alaska as being a serious problem. And our health, behavioral health, we lead the nation in the behavioral health problems. Those are the ones that really prepare people to either work or not. And when we lead the nation in suicide and domestic violence and all of those things, what's happening is the population in smaller communities in rural Alaska is dropping, and the larger hub communities, it's growing. And it's not a pleasant process because health is not being dealt with.
Ms. Sisna, the causes of global warming may be debated by some, but it's a fact that the Arctic is warming. What can be done to protect Arctic peoples and Arctic communities from the consequences of warming, especially in this time of sort of fiscal austerity?
Probably the most important thing, I believe, is to actually start paying attention to how government can listen to the people, community by community, and start doing things like renewable energy, ways to actually help them survive where they are and to build their local economy. And which they oftentimes don't have, but they could if they were coming up with energy sources that were being either transported to them, and the electrification that is being talked about as a potential on the North Slope, with that actually would help communities be stronger. And for the
Mr. Young, 30 seconds.
Shoot.
The question was?
The causes, or the Arctic is warming, what can be done to assist Arctic communities and Arctic people in a time of fiscal restraint?
The main thing is to make sure they have an opportunity to move, like Evelina has done, if they wish to move. If they don't, they have to face nature's force. But if they want to move, we ought to be helping them. I've been doing that with the Marine Corps and trying to get people to build roads and put their facilities in another area, and that's the most successful one. We establish those villages most of the time by air interference, by building schools and clinics, et cetera. And now it's the fact they don't want to move. So it's a very expensive process. But if we want to keep the villages, when they're faced with that weather, let them move.
Tim Bradner.
For Ms. Sisna, how do you stand on opening ANWR? What are your thoughts? And do you think ANWR will be opened in your lifetime, at any time?
I started, my second job in Alaska was working in oil and gas, and it was Jerry Ganapole, Alaska Exploration Corporation. He was a wonderful landman, and he bought the leases right where he thought the oil was, Prudhoe Bay. He sold them, unfortunately, too quickly, and so he wasn't a multimillionaire, but nonetheless, he believed ANWR didn't have much promise. That's not where he thought there was a real promise. And he thought that actually it was reasonable to have it be a wildlife refuge. And I go with that. Also, we get a small percentage of the development because it's on federal land. So as far as I'm concerned, I believe that, for instance, the federal government has the...
Congressman Young, 30 seconds.
Well, of course, I support opening ANWR, Tim. I passed it 12 times. Been very effective in doing that. Bill Clinton vetoed the one time I got out of the Senate. And I would suggest, all due respects, one person's opinion does not count when everybody else thinks the oil is there. It may not be, But until we drill, and Kaktovik should be allowed to drill their oil. That's their oil. Under the Constitution, under the Act of Congress, we gave them that land to develop for their social and economic well-being. They should be allowed to drill it. And I'll continue to work to get ANWR open for the good of the state and this nation and Kaktovik.
Okay, let's go to Lori Townsend, and after that, we'll take a break. We're about halfway through. Lori Townsend.
Mr. Young, do you think Alaskans should amend the state constitution to provide for a rural or Alaska Native subsistence preference?
It's already ruled by constitutional law. It's not Native. And I don't think we should open up the constitution. They want to do it by petition. That's another matter. I do not believe in opening the constitution.
Ms. Sisson.
I've been looking at voting for the initiative on the ballot, which is a constitutional convention. And I certainly can see some positive ideas in that, because there's many things that we need to look at. Things have changed a great deal since the beginning, since the first constitutional convention. So I'd really be in favor of at least opening up the discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Sisna. Thank you, Ms. Sisna and Mr. Young. We will be taking a short break. When we return, we will hear more from the candidates about important issues facing Alaska and the nation. Please stay with us.
Hi, I'm Daisha Eaton, KSKA's South Central reporter. On election night, I'll be reporting from the Denina Center, covering the South Central races. With 59 of 60 seats up for grabs because of redistricting, this is a high-stakes election year. Will the 10-10 split in the Senate be upset? Will the bipartisan coalition survive the election or be cast aside? Whoever wins the South Central races will help determine how Alaska moves forward. Tune in Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
Election day is November 6th. From the presidential race to Alaska's at-large House seat to ballot measures, every vote matters. Every issue matters. Hi, I'm Peter Granitz, APRN's Washington, D.C. correspondent. I'll be at the Egan Center election night, recapping the national races and what it means for our state. What happens if the Senate changes hands? Will Congress remain divided? Can an election remedy some of the brinksmanship? And how can Alaska regain some clout at the Capitol? Tune in Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
Hi, I'm Annie Feit. I'm a producer and reporter at Alaska Public Radio Network. On election night, November 6th, I'm one of the rare people in our newsroom who will be at home trying to get a good night's sleep. That's because my job is to come in early on November 7th to make sure we have all the latest news for you that morning. So tune in Tuesday night for APRN's special election night coverage and the morning of November 7th for more results.
Thank you very much for being with us for this year's Debate for the State. Now let's hear more from the candidates. In this segment, we will be dealing with foreign policy. Tim Bradner has the first question for Mr. Young.
Mr. Young, our country has an image problem in the Middle East. How should America present itself in the Middle East as a favorable model for democracy? For a democratic society.
In a short period of time, Tim, the problem is started with Jimmy Carter. They blame George Bush for everything. Jimmy Carter, when he didn't support the Shah and Iran collapsed, and they had the Ayatollah come in, and that's where the real problem started. It's hard for us to understand we're dealing with a totally different segment of the world society, a Muslim society. And that's the hardest part we have, because you know, when we went into Iraq, which I still support, our biggest mistake was saying it's going to be a democracy. It never has been a democracy. It was actually three countries. The British made it one, because it's easier to control one person. I would suggest respectfully, we cannot, if we're going to use force, we have to use force. We cannot be a police action. It fails miserably. They do not respect weakness.
Ms. Sisna, 30 seconds.
I believe that one of the important things that is a problem, I think even in Alaska, is understanding that there are different worldviews and coming to understand more about them by learning. And we do have people that have come from those countries in our country. We could learn more and be more, far more focused on how are we different and what's the similarities, and work from that point of view whenever we can.
Lori Townsend.
Ms. Sisna, more than 2,000 Americans have died in Afghanistan. Billions of dollars in aid have been stolen by corrupt officials. Has the war in Afghanistan been worth the expense in terms of lives and lost monetary aid?
Lessons learned is probably where we have to be after things are done. You can't redo, unfortunately, something like that. But what we can do is be more thoughtful. And thoughtfulness is not too often what we put in this process. But I don't think we make it in the end until we actually start thinking these things through and doing them with some thought before we go in, some study about the area, and figuring out the cost benefit before we go in.
Mr. Young, 30 seconds.
Terribly disappointed in Obama. That was supposed to be his war, and he was supposed to get Ben Laden, and then that was the end of it. We're still there. We shouldn't be there because they're again running the police action. I talk to these troops when they come back, and they're very frustrated because they can't return fire. They can be prosecuted if they do so, if there's collateral loss. This is not a well-run engagement. If you're going to fight a war, fight a war. If you're going to have a police action, don't go in. And that's our biggest problem. We should be out of there.
Tim Bradner.
Ms. Sisna, if we can confirm that the Taliban and Pakistan have captured one of that country's nuclear weapons, what should we do?
Yeah, the problem in that case is a really serious problem. And what I have seen so far is that we're jumping into things without really having gotten all of the facts. Are the information that we have gathered has not been really accurate. We went to war before without really knowing whether or not there were nuclear things there, and found that there wasn't. But we went ahead and we blasted. It's our young people that get sent there. I think we have to do this with a great deal of care in before we put our people in danger again.
Mr. Young.
Did you say, Tim, that if they get one, or you know for sure? How was the question?
If we confirm that the Taliban have captured a weapon.
And then we attack. We do it not by manpower, we use a nuclear weapon. It's the only way you can handle this, because they will use it. That's the biggest fear in the Middle East now. And that may sound kind of drastic, but they will use it. And who will they use it against? Our ally. And that should be stopped immediately.
Lori Townsend.
Mr. Young. On China, what advice do you have for the president on military relations? Should our military posture be aggressive or more passive and nuanced?
Well, you know, again, that's a question. What is China doing militarily, aggressively? Are they planning to invade Russia? I actually don't think they'll ever attack the United States. They're beating us economically. Why would they? We're their biggest consumer. So definitely we would not, I do not believe they would attack us. They may be interested in Russia, then they got a black eye. This really is the prop up their government right now for their own domestic problems that could occur. But I don't believe they're manning an army to take an attack or become a world power other than being economically strong.
Sharon Sisna, 30 seconds.
I think that one of the things that we need to do in preparation to that right this instant is to understand exactly that we're the state that is actually the closest to China, and that we need to be getting our house in order in this state, and that's the first step. And then the second step in terms of exactly what their reaction is, I think strength is important, but I also think thoughtfulness needs to be in place, and it needs to be built right this second, really building that up now.
Tim Bradner for Sharon Sisna.
Ms. Sisna, back to the Middle East. Do you think diplomacy, education, or military muscle is the path to stopping jihadist organizations?
I think that education diplomacy I was trying to remember that, but those are two of the things that we tend not to have used well, and I think if we were to actually do that more thoughtfully sooner, preventing is the best way to do it. That's not what our culture has been moving towards, but I think it's the best way to actually survive all of this.
Mr. Young, 30 seconds.
These people that are actually the jihad are trying to eliminate any Gentiles. They only respect strength. And we're dealing with the government, remember, the governments. And they attack their own government. They're very frankly fanatics, and they only respect strength. It's the one thing they do respect. They don't respect diplomacy or any other fashion of trying to get along with them because they're attacking their own governments.
Final question in this round from Lori Townsend.
Mr. Young, Congress raised Americans' taxes to pay for World War II, Korean War, the war in Vietnam. Our military response after the September 11th, 2001 attacks have been paid for without new tax money, mostly by debt. Why does Congress refuse to raise money to pay for 21st century wars?
It all began with Lyndon B. Johnson and the Vietnam War. Bread, guns, and butter. We think we can have it both. I can remember when I was in World War II, we had Victory Gardens and aluminum collections. We all rations we had participated in. We don't do that anymore. We can have a war and our butter too. That's a bad policy. If we're going to go to war, then we should pay for it. And I will say right up front, we made a huge mistake beginning with Lyndon B. Johnson. The fact that we have both, that's not right. We should all participate in it. We have police actions, and that's what creates the real problem that we've had recently for the debt and, by the way, the loss of life, because we didn't, in fact, have the people involved.
Ms. Sisna, 30 seconds.
We have rising numbers of people. Well, actually, we have rising number of people who are falling through the cracks, actually, is the truth of the matter, with smaller people making huge amounts more. Strength is really, I think, a critical issue, and strength really needs to start with all of our people, and that we really make positive that in strengthening our country, we're really making sure that all are being prepared for what can happen. And security is important. Build the people at every level into that by making positive that we've focused on them and their needs. And then I do believe it's strength, but I think demonstrating strength throughout a good
administration. Thank you, Ms. Sisna. Now we'll go to foreign policy questions, which the candidates will have an opportunity to question one another. You will have the first question. Mr. Young will have 45 seconds to respond, and again, you'll have 15 seconds to comment on what you hear. So your first question on foreign policy.
On foreign policy, you have said that you believe that that we should immediately go in and react. Can you think of other options besides attack on any of the questions that have been asked?
When you're dealing with the people that we're dealing with, the jihad group, is there's no other thing that they respond to. Strength is the only thing they respect. That's been proven time after time. And we have to deal with the governments that are in power at this time. And when they're attacking their own governments, the only thing they respect is to eliminate. And I've been strong about this all my life. You pick a fight with me, then you got a problem. The idea of diplomacy in this case does not work. You're dealing with a group of people that do not believe in diplomacy with any Gentiles at all.
Ms. Sisna, 15 seconds.
Am I supposed to be asking another question?
Excuse no, you're me. Commenting on what you've heard from him.
Okay. Well, what is interesting to me is that across the world, I'm hearing more and more reactions to the United States and the fact that we're seen as being the warring people, and instead of being the people that are doing more than just using up the resources of those countries and other places, but that we need to actually be seen as also people who are trying to come to some kind of compromise whenever we can.
Thank you very much. Mr. Young, your question for Ms. Sisna, and Ms. Sisna, again, you'll have 45 seconds to respond.
And if this is the case, how do you deal with Iran and Israel?
Between those two countries, the problem in between those two countries is, again, trying to get two battling forces, we've seen that happening constantly throughout time, is getting them to come to areas where they both share in the need. And in that part of the world, they do have survival issues that they've got to both be concerned about. And I think we, as the United States, can work and help build some connections.
And would, in that case, would you, do I answer that, her answer?
You can comment on her answer.
Well, I'm just saying.
You have an opportunity to ask another question. Do you want to take your time to ask another question?
No, I just want to say that, you know, I'm a big supporter of Israel. Iran is an enemy in the Middle East. You talk to their leaders. It goes back to the leadership. They're trying to destroy Israel, and I think that diplomacy in this case will not work if Iran continues to build the nuclear capability that they're seeking.
Mr. Young, your next question for Sharon Sisson.
Well, again, I'll ask the question, what would you do in the case if Iran does get a nuclear bomb and Israel, in fact, retaliates quickly because they have to survive? Which side would you be on?
I'd be wanting to jump right into the middle and try to build a wall. And can that be done? I think right away we need to be constantly looking at exactly what is happening, getting whatever area we can in there to be doing that wall. And I think information is a really huge thing, and I've seen failure after failure in terms of actually knowing what's really going on. There appear to be different stories.
Mr. Young, 15 seconds.
Again, the question was, if that was to happen, you were going to build a wall. Now, we can't even build a wall down on our borders. How in the world you would build a wall when the nuclear attack is imminent? It cannot happen. We have to be well aware of this. We have to take care of Iran as we should, or Israel will do it for us.
Back to Sharon Sisson. Your next question for Mr. Young.
Yes, and when I was saying wall, I didn't mean an actual literal wall, because I don't think it works. I don't think you could do it. But do you not see any avenues for actually working with people who have a different worldview than we have?
We've tried that for many, many years. They have tried it. We had Camp David. We had different meetings. We've had signatures signed but both sides, and it doesn't work. Our biggest concern is nuclear capability by Iran in the Middle East. And when they say we're going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, that's what they intend to do. They have a different value in life than we do. And yet Israel is our best ally in the Middle East and has always been, and we have to continue to support them. So I'm suggesting we're being very lax now with Iran. I think Obama's making a big mistake. I think it can happen. We can have a potential nuclear catastrophe in the Middle East if we don't act now.
Sharon Sisson, 15 seconds to comment on what you've heard.
I think that there are different ways of actually seeing some of these things, and I have heard different interpretations that make me think that we oftentimes assume things without really understanding them.
Okay, Mr. Young, your final question in this segment for Ms. Sisson.
Again, just out of curiosity, Sharon, which committees would you try to get on if you were back in Congress, which probably won't happen, but if you were there, what committees would you seek?
Naturally, things that have to do with health and social services, just because I have many years in those areas. I was in the legislature in military and veterans affairs for over 10 years. So the security of our own state and our own country is something that's important to me. I think within our boundaries, we have a great deal of power to do it right.
15 seconds.
Well, again, there's only two things of value in this state right now. When you're in Congress, you can only be on two committees on both sides of the aisle. Resources and transportation are the most important things because they handle energy and construction of infrastructure, and that's very, very important.
Okay, Ms. Sisson, you have an opportunity for a final question in this segment for Mr. Young.
Yes, the question I have is, do you see the value of looking at and being a very vital, active part of getting services for Alaska in health and education?
Well, you can ask me that question, because I've worked very hard to get the Alaska Native health care the best in this nation. And we've been very successful getting that done up here, and I'll continue to work in that arena because they do need it. This hospital down here was part of my work that's been put in, and I'm very proud of that. Healthcare is very important, but employment is very important. Energy is very important. You can't run healthcare facilities without cheap energy. So you have to concentrate in getting energy so you have the good schools and the good health facilities that you're talking about. Without energy, you can't have it.
Sure, insist in the 15 seconds.
Putting Alaska in as statehood meant that Congress did give Alaska the ability to develop its oil and gas. And that's what I think the state should be doing. But I also think that's why we have leases. But I also think that we have to start paying attention to our people and really dealing with the fact that we lead the nation in so many bad levels in education
and health. Thank you very much, Ms. Cisna. During this next section, we solicited questions from the voters, from viewers, and we've picked some of them, and each candidate will have 45 seconds to respond to the voters' questions. So voter number one wants to know, what can the government do to promote a greener lifestyle in Alaska? 45 seconds from Sharon Cisna, and then 45 seconds from Mr. Young.
Well, I think energy is, in fact, an extremely important problem. And I think that there have been some proposals to actually make positive that we're making sure that diesel fuel is not the only fuel, that in fact that there we need to wean some parts of the state off of that. Renewable energy is something that is being worked on throughout the state. There's some wonderful programs in rural Alaska that I really believe give chances for local jobs, and that means all the other things that can be done in individual areas.
Thank you. Mr. Young, 45 seconds.
Well, in first place, I don't think the government should be doing anything. I think the people will wake up someday when the high cost of fuel occurs and figure out have better homes, build better homes, drive better vehicles, get hydropower, which, by the way, this administration does not support as a renewable power, which I can understand. It's the best form of power you've got. We should be building a Susitna Dam. We should have no diesel used on the lower parts of the state down in the southeast at all. And again, we should use all forms of energy to make it green. But most people think of green and they don't understand what role does the government have in it. It's up to the people. We go back to the people again. Listen to the people. They don't have to be told what to do.
Okay, voter number two emailed us, asked, this is for Congressman Young, starting off with him, and you'll have an opportunity to comment, Ms. Cisna. Congressman Young, after voting for the Patriot Act, you said it is the worst piece of legislation you ever voted for. What have you done to modify or repeal this act? 45 seconds.
I've supported the repeal of the Patriot Act. I've never voted for it again. This was an after effect of 9/11, and who could vote against the Patriot Act? It's like Leave No Child Behind. It came out immediately after 9/11, and we rushed it through, and it was a bad mistake. It does infringe upon habeas corpus. It infringes upon individual rights. It's another overextension of the federal government. And we're working now to repeal it, and we'll continue to do that. Again, we have to get it through the Senate.
Sharon Cisna, 45 seconds to comment on what you heard from Mr. Young or comment on the Patriot Act.
I believe that it does have to be eliminated. I think it was a very huge mistake.
Okay. Voter number three asks, what aspects of science, scientific advice, and counsel are you going to incorporate into your activities while a member of Congress? 45 seconds, Sharon Sisson.
Research in Alaska is not, we have a lot of research happening in some areas, but we don't have what we need to have. So I am going to be looking for ways to make positive that we do have more research being done on Alaska's issues, especially in, say, the northern parts of the state, the areas that are really being impacted by the change that's going on in our climate, for instance.
Mr. Young, 45 seconds.
The state's been very neglectful, and Sharon talks about being in the state legislature for 17 years. They haven't kept up with the research, and the government itself, if they do research, they research through the contrary side of the state. The state DEC, and I tried to talk to the governor on this, having a science committee that was taking study science, what it affects us, as an imposed regulation by the federal government. That's what should be done. It isn't research on the federal level. The federal level, they have research on stellar sea lions. Big deal. They found out that they were wrong all this time. I can go in the Fairbanks. They were wrong all this time. I can go in every area of the state where their science and their study, we didn't keep up. The state has a responsibility. It is our job as a state. The state legislature failed miserably, and so has the government when it comes to keeping up with science when it concerns the state.
Okay, we have a little time here for questions from the reporters. One question from each of you for each of the candidates.
Should I start?
Yes, please.
Mr. Young, there are few documented cases of voter fraud, yet numerous states are working to institute stricter voter ID laws. Do you think these laws are needed? Why or why not?
Well, I think Alaska is in much better shape. We've been very careful. Alaskans have been very actively involved, and most people are registered if they wish to be registered. I think there are problems in Lower 48. I think they should look at it. And what's wrong? I have to have an ID to drive a car. I have an ID to get my Social Security. I have to have an ID to buy a bottle of booze. If you don't, you're not being carded correctly. But the fact is, there's nothing wrong with having an ID. Other states wish to do that. It is a state's prerogative to do so. And I think it's important, and I'm going to defend them. The state of Alaska has been in pretty good shape. As you notice, though, the voters' rights bill is going to be reviewed by the Supreme Court. And we're going to study that project. State of Alaska is part of that. But right now, I think an ID is important.
Ms. Sisna.
I think an ID is important. I do remember at the age of 9 being in France and looking at the American flag and my parents talking about us being free and not needing the ID and watching the people across the street having to have their ID available and actually being strip searched. And so I do hearken back to that time and think about the fact that is ID always a necessity? And so I actually have some mixed feelings on that.
Hey, we'll go to Tim Bradner for the final question. 30 seconds from each of you, so it'll have to be brief.
Ms. Sisna, do you think the war on drugs has been effective?
No, obviously not. And it's obvious that and many of our health focus, many of our education focus really haven't done it correctly. We need to be working on all of those things. The preventative side is the most important side. So if you want to put in money, the least amount of money with the greatest effect, you deal with children right after they're born and their parents. It's the cheapest way to do it. And I think that's what we have to start doing, is really working on the preventative side first.
Okay, let's go to Mr. Young for 30 seconds.
No, Tim, and I believe in the D's, dealing your dead. The dealers are what we have to go after, not the users, the dealers. And we have to address that issue. They just get hand slaps now. Even in the state of Alaska, they get hand slaps. There's no real punishment if you're a dealer. And those are the ones that are really the maggots in society. The one that sell to young kids, the one that sell to a person that's hooked real bad. And I believe in the two D's, dealing your dead.
Let's go to our final statement, starting 1 minute from Sharon Sisna.
In my trips around the state and in all of the people that I've talked to about the issues that they're facing, what I know is that we have to bring the public into the process. We have to have information flowing between people on the ground level through each different layer of government so that the three people that serve us in Congress actually are having that connection with the public constantly and with the leaders all along the way. And that kind of networking I have not seen, and I don't think we can face the future without a much better system than we have now.
Thank you. Mr. Young, 1 minute, please, for a closing statement.
I want to thank KAKM and the station all the years I've been doing this. I always enjoy it. It's important that you watch the debates. I would suggest respectfully, again, I'm asking you for your vote on November the 6th. I have served you because you've asked me to do so. And if I can repeat myself, this is not about Don Young. Who can best represent for you? Who can stand up for you? Standing up for Alaska, fighting for Alaska and Alaskans. I've done that for you and I'll continue to do it. I'm a senior citizen, but I feel like I'm a young person and I can keep fighting for you. And if you check the record, I have done the job for you. And I love this state, I love the people of the state, and I'll continue to work for you when you vote for me on November the 6th. And I thank you and God bless you.
Thank you, Ms. Cisna. Thank you, Mr. Young. And thanks to all of you for joining us. This concludes Debate for the State. Good evening.
Producer Pat Yak. Associate Producer Josh Edge. Host Michael Carey. Panelists Lori Townsend, News Director of Alaska Public Radio Network, and Tim Bradner of Alaska Journal of Commerce. Director John LaFournaise. Camera operators Josh Edge. Audio Scott Bruno. And timing Pat Yak. Production assistance by the League of Women Voters, Pat Redman and Tina DeLapp. Engineering, Sean Fletcher and Larry Anderson. Traffic, Kristen Dugan. Set design and construction, KPB Architects and Neisser Construction.